Time for Maine's Political Pulse with Mal Leary and Steve Missler. Welcome back, gentlemen.
Hello, Erwin.
Hey, Erwin.
Well, this is it. The midterm elections are Tuesday, so let's sum up what we think we know about the races entering these final days. First, the race for governor. Do we have a sense of who's ahead now in the three-way contest between independent Terry Hayes, Democrat Janet Mills, and Republican Sean Moody?
Well, we have an idea of who's ahead. But the problem is all of the polls, public polls that are out there, use a different methodology. And the private polls being used by the candidates use, yet again, different methodologies. But what it appears is that Janet Mills may have a slight lead in this race. All of these polls are going to have a margin of error of 4 or 5 points. So even if Janet Mills is up 4 points, she may be actually down a point.
Alan Caron, the independent, is gone, but Terry Hayes, the Democrat turned independent, is still in. Steve, is it a given that her votes will be coming from Mills?
No, it's not a given. I think there's an assumption that because Terry Hayes is a former Democrat and a lot of the positions that she has taken during this course of this campaign align with a left-of-center ideology, that she will draw from Mills. And there's also an expectation, I think, from Republicans that she will too, because they're basically running these ads that cast Mills and Hayes as the same. They're hoping that the two of them will split the vote and that will create a wider path for Republican Sean Moody.
Turnout can be key in any race. Mal, do any of these candidates have a better get out the vote effort?
I think the problem with trying to assess that, Erwin, is that get out the vote efforts are really local efforts. So you go to some parts of the state, you have a clear advantage to the Republicans. Other parts of the state, you have a clear advantage to the Democrats. But to your point that turnout is crucial, it is crucial and could easily determine the governor's race.
Some of the ads we've seen in the campaign most recently have begun to turn negative. Is there any dirt that we know about that hasn't shown up in the ads yet?
Well, if there was more dirt, we probably would have reported it. But what I have been surprised by, and I have to eat a little bit of crow here, is that Janet Mills is out with an ad that mentions this story that was reported earlier this month where a woman alleges that Sean Moody is guilty of sex discrimination because he fired her while she was pregnant. Now, that was an issue that I thought would come via an independent or an outside group, not Janet Mills herself, but she in fact has used that in a late ad that is out on television right now.
They showed up at a woman's house and fired her just for having a baby.
And it seems to be a response to Republican attacks on Mills that really targets what could be her strength in this election, which is how she resonates with women voters. It brings up this case where a sheriff's deputy was accused of sexual misconduct with minors, a case that the attorney general's office attempted to prosecute. The ad brings that up and mentions that there was a plea deal where this sheriff's deputy essentially got off with not much of a penalty.
He's free. But those girls will never be free of that memory.
What it doesn't mention, which is a really important piece of context, is that a jury found the deputy not guilty of 2 charges and it deadlocked on 20 others.
Let's look next at the second congressional district. Now, it always seemed to me that if any Democratic wave emerged nationally this fall, incumbent Republican Bruce Poliquin could be in trouble. How has he handled the potential challenge that's posed by Democrat Jared Golden in this race?
Well, Erwin, I think he's basically run the prototypical incumbent campaign, which is to keep his head low for the most part. He has participated in very few public debates, I think 2, and basically trying to talk about his opponent as if he's this young radical insurgent who poses all kinds of threats to what they have come to expect from Poliquin. Whereas Golden, who is attempting to do what nobody has done since 1916, by the way, which is to unseat an incumbent in the second congressional district, he's talking about healthcare, and Bruce not being responsive to constituents.
Mal, it seems like a lot of outside money is also coming into this race.
Unbelievable amounts of money. I'm seeing some figures that show it could be the most money coming into any congressional race from outside in the country. Those numbers keep changing day to day because more money keeps coming in. I think there's so much interest the second district. This race has always been close. This is going to be probably the race that is decided by ranked choice voting.
You answered my next question, which is how likely does that seem? There are two independents in this race, Will Hoare and Tiffany Bond. Are they going to draw enough votes, do you think, for that to happen?
Well, I think what will most likely happen is that it'll be so close between Poliquin and Golden that the runoff that is triggered by not getting the 50 plus 1% seems very possible, even though the two independents are, from what we've seen, polling really, really low, low single digits, really nobody knows who they are. The key here is undecided. So if they break one way or the other, then we might actually get a majority winner on election day. But if we don't, of course, we will go into the runoff rounds where the second and third place votes of the independents, especially, I think, could determine the race.
If that happens, you may have a challenge going into federal court. I can't envision Bruce Poliquin giving up with him being defeated by ranked choice voting when he doesn't believe in ranked choice voting to begin with. So, I mean, we're talking about what could be a story that goes on for weeks and weeks.
Now to the first district, Democrat Shelley Pingree against Republican Mark Holbrook and Independent Marty Grohman. Any reason to expect any surprise there?
It seems unlikely from where I'm sitting. I mean, last time we talked about this race, the thing I kept coming back to was the fact that Shelley Pingree has held this seat for a number of years, and she's endured GOP wave elections and, of course, good years for Democrats, too. And when I say endured, she's won convincingly. She's been over 50%. She beat Mark Holbrook 2 years ago, who's her challenger, the Republican challenger now, by something like, what was it, 16 points, Mal? Is that accurate? And that was a GOP wave year. That was President Trump's year, and she still clobbered her opponent that time. The real question is whether or not Marty Grohman and Holbrook can drag her down below 50%, which would trigger the runoff rounds. That's what Grohman's strategy is that they get to the runoff rounds and that he's pulled enough votes from the left, center left and center right, to potentially win in the runoff rounds. I don't know if that's going to happen, frankly.
The reality in the race is the public numbers we've seen, again, you got to take with a grain of salt, but she's consistently been around 50%. And what most political scientists will tell you is that the undecided voters usually break about the same as the decided voters when they actually go to the polls. So she's very close to that 50% right now, probably comfortably at 52, 53%. So that's what Marty Grohman's trying to do, but it's going to be really tough, I think, to keep her below that 50%.
Let me ask you guys this. I mean, as you pointed out, Steve, Shelley Pingree has done very well, even in Republican wave elections. What's the difference between her and Bruce Poliquin? Why has she done so much better? Why is Poliquin having perhaps a bit of a challenge on his hands this year?
Well, I think it's just the complexion of the districts that they represent. I think the first congressional district is overwhelmingly progressive, and the second congressional district is purple. It's a mix between a lot of rural areas that tend to vote conservative or Republican, and there's a couple of pockets of somewhat urban areas that break for the Democrat. It's for the same reason that President Obama carried that district convincingly during his 2 terms as president. It's also why we've had Democrats and Republicans representing that district over the years. It's never been consistently one party or the other. The only real determining factor there has been incumbency. That's the thing that's really carried the day. But in terms of it being overwhelmingly one way or the other, that's why there's such a stark difference between those districts.
When you look at all the polls that are coming out across the country and the polls here in Maine, you have healthcare costs. The whole health issue is huge. And Bruce Poliquin arguably is on the wrong side of that issue, having voted to repeal the Affordable Care Act, having voted to take away some protections of the Affordable Care Act, where Shelley Pingree has supported them. So I think that's a difference on a very important wedge issue that seems to be out there this year.
To distill that point that he just made, Pingree has the right issues for the right ideology of her district, and Bruce Poliquin is on the wrong side of an issue potentially in a district that really cares about that same issue, healthcare.
All right. U.S. Senator Angus King seeking a second term. The polls say he'll finish first, but will he avoid a ranked choice vote count against Republican Eric Brakey and Democrat Zach Ringelstein?
Again, I think so. He consistently has been polling in the public polls that we have access to at 50% or more. If you see the votes breaking the way they usually do among the undecideds, he's going to be solidly in that 50% category.
And the other signal that we get from that is that Eric Brakey, the Republican, is running what is essentially a base campaign. He's a person that actually opposed Donald Trump's election in 2016, has suddenly become enamored with the president. And he's doing that, I think, out of necessity. He has to get Trump voters, Republican voters, to back his campaign to have a decent showing on Election Day.
All right. Lest anyone forget, they will be voting on legislative races Tuesday as well. Right now, Democrats control the main House, Republicans the state Senate. Mal, first question here is for you. I mean, historically, these chambers do flip from time to time, don't they?
I mean, it's conceivable that the Republicans could take the House and the Democrats take the Senate this time. The problem is these races are so local. In Maine, people go door to door because you literally can visit every single home that's in your district when you're running for the House. So you can have a Democrat win in a Republican district and a Republican win in a Democratic district if they work really hard and people like the message they have. The Senate's a little different. The Senate is more akin to a congressional race in terms of the money's being spent. We're seeing money being spent now in state Senate races. It used to be enough to get elected to Congress in this state.
That's right.
It all is so localized in each one of these races, it's very, very hard to predict.
And I know we're mentioning the legislative races last in this conversation, but they're really important. We started talking about the governor's race, right? Which is the person who's going to lead this state for the next 4 years, potentially eight. What they're able to do will depend on the shape and the power dynamic of those legislative races. I think one of the reasons why we put them last is that they're really hard to figure out how it's going to go because of the points that Mal just made.
And it's not just the agenda of the new governor. In Maine, we have constitutional officers, the attorney general, the state treasurer, the secretary of state, are all elected by the legislature, not by the people. And all of those folks have independent offices. They operate independently from the executive branch, even though you would consider them to be part of the executive branch in most states. And as we've seen with the attorney general now, Janet Mills, she has gone up against the governor, Paul LePage, so many times that it's almost a constant battle between the two.
Maine Public's political reporters, Mal Leary and Steve Missler. And that's our last Maine's political polls before Tuesday's election. Now, if you want to catch up on some of the big issues and big races, you can check out our earlier episodes. You'll find them online at mainepublic.org/politicalpulse. Now, you can also find them on iTunes or wherever you download your podcasts. You can find abbreviated versions of Maine's Political Pulse on Friday's Morning Edition program on Maine Public Radio. Now, remember to go do your civic duty and vote. Then you can follow Mal, Steve, and the rest of Maine Public's election night coverage over at Maine Public's website or on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public Television will also have election night coverage. Our producer is Willis Ryder Arnold. Our music is from Rob Holt. For Maine Public, I'm Erwin Gratz.